Thursday, February 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States and China agree on a united international response to North Korea's recent nuclear test and other actions. The Philippines marks the 30th anniversary of the People Power Revolution that ousted Ferdinand Marcos.
There have been a lot of reports and a lot of investigations by U.S. publications, for instance, about the corruption, the level of corruption of the Marcos dictatorship.
And we'll hear about a new hit song for Rihanna. It's all ahead. U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice, who met Wednesday with visiting Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, said both countries have agreed on the importance of a strong and united international response to North Korea's provocations in a new draft U.N. Security Council resolution. Without providing details, Rice said it goes beyond previous resolutions. The announcement followed the January 6th North Korea nuclear test and its February 7th rocket launch, both activities banned under previous resolutions. A council diplomat said it is a substantive draft containing a significant number of blockage points that may include the blacklisting of both North Korean individuals and entities. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry discussed the importance of bilateral cooperation with Beijing on the new document during a meeting in Washington Tuesday with Wang.
If the resolution is approved, it will go beyond anything that we have previously passed. That was specifically called for in the last resolution in 2013 that said if DPRK violated the resolution and they either tested or engaged in a missile launch, there would be, quote, significant steps taken as a consequence of that. I believe that what we are considering is significant, and we both hope that this can move forward very soon. The goal of this is not to be in a series of cycling, repetitive punishments. That doesn't lead anywhere. The goal is to try to get Kim Jong-un and the DPRK to recognize that all of the countries of the world are united, as we were with respect to Iran, in saying that the world will not be safer with additional nuclear weapons.
Korea Society's Senior Director for Policy, Stephen Norper, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the joint draft document may represent a change in Chinese thinking toward Pyongyang.
China appeared to be reluctant in the 7 or 8 weeks since the nuclear test and after the missile test by the DPRK. And there was certainly a great deal of distance in January and early February. There still are very strong points of disagreement, and fundamentally China would like to see a negotiation strategy where, as the U.S. and South Korea feel, that that avenue has already been tried and that they should be taking stronger measures. But it appears that China has acquiesced or in some way moved toward the United States position. Certainly that's the result of a lot of strong U.S. diplomacy. And there's been a lot of activity both in terms of Secretary Kerry going to Seoul and Foreign Minister of China Wang Yi here as of just the last day.
Diplomats quoted declined to divulge details about the draft sanctions resolution. What might it include?
Well, certainly the measures would be stronger. The 2 points that have been most discussed in terms of U.S. suggestions that China might acquiesce toward would be blocking DPRK ships in international ports, or at least preventing them from docking. And secondly, the cutoff of bank services, trying to limit international financial transactions. That appears to have been signaled by the Chinese just before Wang Yi's arrival in Washington, in the sense that the largest Chinese bank reportedly was cutting off cash transactions. This, according to a bank official located up toward the North Korean border and who said that there seemed to be problems with Chinese business people trying to do transactions in cash with North Korea, primarily over coal and minerals. But that appears to signal that there has indeed already been a cutoff, perhaps in response to these tests.
What kind of bite might these have on the North?
Well, that would be very significant in that China accounts for approximately 80% of North Korean trade. and certainly most of the financial transactions that North Korea conducts are through China. That would have a tremendous impact on an economy that is already cash-strapped and reportedly a regime that is already dealing with financial pressures. So getting Chinese cooperation would be significant. It, of course, is a long road toward full compliance, but it appears in the initial discussions that Chinese banks seem to be cautious and Chinese firms seem to be increasingly cautious about wanting to do business with North Koreans, primarily because they don't want to become subject to international financial restrictions that would come with them being associated with the North Koreans. And certainly that is the intention in Washington, D.C. of the new legislation on Capitol Hill, is to have a secondary impact by those cooperating with North Korea.
Stephen Norper of the Korea Society. And now for a look at what's trending on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Andrew Belshevsky. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, good to be with you. Well, out of Iran, that country will be voting this Friday in their parliamentary elections. And a lot of people in Iran are using two apps that have been purchased by Facebook to communicate. They're using Telegram and Instagram. In Iran, rather than filling out a bubble or something like you do in other countries or pressing a lever, you have to write down the name of the candidate. And so these apps have been very helpful because people have to remember the name of the candidate they want to vote for. So they're using these apps to do that. There's a lot of concern that they could be shut down very quickly and very easily by the government. We actually saw this earlier this week in Uganda's presidential election. That country's government shut down the social media. They said it was a security measure. But a lot of people concerned that it's a censorship issue, that they're trying to stop people from communicating and using these apps. So we'll see if that happens in Iran on this Friday, if they shut any of that down. The interesting thing in Uganda was that a lot of people were able to bypass that using VPNs and proxy servers to get around the ban. So it'll be interesting to see if Iran does the same thing, if people there can use these VPNs and proxy servers. I think a lot of people there are already using them to get online. If the government can shut it down or if they can bypass that.
Yes, VPNs are very popular in China as well.
Yes, absolutely. Anything to kind of subvert internet censorship. We have another interesting story from Nigeria. In Nigeria, in Lagos, they're holding Social Media Week.
Oh.
And this is something that's happening all around the world. In fact, we carried this on hashtag VOA, our show, this past week, looking at Social Media Week and some big social media issues. And they're doing it in New York, Hamburg, Jakarta, and Lagos. And in Lagos, they're finding that most Nigerians, when they comes to looking for love and dating apps, you know, we have different ones like Tinder and those kind of things. Well, they're still going to Facebook, and that apparently two-thirds to three-quarters of those that are looking for dates online in Nigeria are turning to Facebook. And it's an interesting application of Facebook because it's not necessarily a dating app. It's more of a chance to share photos and connect with friends.
Right.
But Nigerians are using that to connect with each other. So very interesting news out of that. And like I said, something we covered on hashtag, it's up on voanews.com/hashtag VOA, our recent show on Social Media Week and those social media issues.
Yeah, well, make sure out there, please go look at it, the most recent edition of hashtag. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Belshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
When thinking about the impact of air pollution on human health, respiratory and cardiovascular disease would probably be among the first to come to mind. A new study conducted by an international team of researchers is suggesting that laboratory rats who were exposed to the highly polluted air of Beijing for 3 to 8 weeks also gained weight, along with having cardiorespiratory problems. To reach their findings, the team put pregnant rats, along with their young, in two separate compartments. One was open to the outdoor air of Beijing, and the other included an air filter that removed most of the air pollution. Besides weight gain, the researchers also found that the air pollution-breathing rats also had higher levels of LDL, or bad cholesterol, triglycerides, and insulin resistance. Having a higher insulin resistance level often leads to type 2 diabetes. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about Rihanna's new hit song. The Philippines Thursday marked the 30th anniversary of the People Power Movement that ousted the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who ruled the country for two decades. Marcos and his wife Imelda were famed for their excessive spending and accused of corruption. At a ceremony to observe the anniversary, Philippine President Benigno Aquino called on voters to reject the political reemergence of the Marcos family. Marcos's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., known as Bongbong, is running for vice president in the national election to be held in May. Carlos Conde is Philippines researcher for Human Rights Watch. He tells me that the 1983 assassination of the current president's father, Benigno Aquino, known as Ninoy, at the Manila International Airport after returning from exile, ultimately led to the toppling of Marcos.
Basically, it was the watershed moment, if you can call it that, during that time. I mean, the assassination of Ninoy Aquino, who was the father of the present president, you know, galvanized the Filipinos' feelings towards or against the Marcos dictatorship and showed how bad things had become at that point. So that, you know, that led to protest and people organizing and eventually to the People Power Revolution in February 1986.
Was it ever established who was responsible for the Aquino assassination?
Well, that is one of the curious things about this, because there were commissions that were formed to investigate the assassination of Ninoy Aquino, and there were some indications during the trial and during hearings of who was behind the killings. In fact, several of the perpetrators themselves were actually convicted, but it was never established legally or accurately, specifically, who exactly ordered the killing. So to this day, it's one of those issues that hangs over our head collectively. I mean, who actually ordered Ninoy Aquino killed? Was it Imelda Marcos? Was it Ferdinand Marcos himself? So, and people assume that that was the case, that that dictator was the one who ordered the killings. But that has never actually been proven in court.
Well, after the Aquino assassination, fast forward to 1986, where an election took place between Ninoy Aquino's widow, Cory Aquino, and Marcos. By then, Marcos was in bad health, and an election took place, and there was, I believe, quite a bit of dispute over, you know, who actually won that, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was. I mean, a massive cheating, actually, that happened during that time. In fact, one of the catalysts for Filipinos to come out in the streets and protest some more was when this group of election officials or officers who were canvassing the votes essentially stormed out of the Commission on Election offices and then declared that the election was a fraud. And then that as well, that made it clear that the election was rigged and forces were trying to make sure that Marcos would win. But people took that as a sign that things were really going bad and some more protests happened.
Did Marcos finally step down because he was pressured by the U.S. government?
Depends actually on who you ask. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about the U.S. government's role in how this crisis unraveled. I mean, there was this conversation between Marcos and a top American official who supposedly told him to now is the time to cut and cut cleanly. But if you talk to, you know, activists or ordinary people, Filipino politicians, you would say that the pressure from the public protest was the one that compelled the Americans to, in turn, compel Marcos to step down. So the history of how all of this actually went down is a little still being contested. But what is clear is that the protest by the Filipino people, beginning with the assassination of Ninoy Aquino, and that in turn led to all this protest, led to the downfall.
And, you know, subsequently, things were discovered. For instance, the amount of, I know everyone laughs about this, but the vast amount of shoes that Imelda Marcos had. And you could say not just that, but their lifestyle and rumors about taking money and all that, the sort of level of corruption under the Marcos regime.
Oh, yes. I mean, the shoes, the 2,000 pair of shoes of Imelda Marcos, that was a really dramatic and a very specific illustration of their opacity, basically, of the dictatorship. And it became a symbol of how crooked this dictatorship was. But even before all of this happened, there have been a lot of reports and a lot of investigations by U.S. publications, for instance, about the corruption, the level of corruption of the Marcos dictatorship, you know, the properties that they own around the world, the jewelry, the buildings that they own in New York, all of those things. I mean, all of these things help Filipinos in finally becoming aware about the extent of the corruption, and thus they decide that these things have to stop.
Carlos Conde, he's Philippines researcher for Human Rights Watch. Marcos died in exile in Hawaii in 1989. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Rihanna is always in the news musically. Here's International Edition's Susan Yaki with VOA Border Crossings host Larry London.
Border Crossings' Larry London has joined me here in the studio, and he's going to tell us about a new number one song in America by Rihanna. Welcome, Larry. What's going on?
Well, Susan, I've got some big news for fans of Rihanna and fans of music in general. We have a new number one Billboard Hot 100 song, which happens to be Rihanna's 14th number one song. That is very impressive, especially when you consider that only Mariah Carey and the Beatles have had more number one hits than Rihanna has had.
Well, that's something to respect.
That is definitely something to respect. Rihanna turned 28 last week, and she's been in the news recently for a number of different reasons. She was supposed to perform at the Grammys. Apparently, there are sources who say that she had a meltdown and pulled out of her performance, although she blamed it on bronchitis and said her doctor said to rest. And I know that her tour for her brand new album, Anti, which is her eighth album, her tour had to be delayed by 2 weeks because of production problems, something with the stage. But they've put it back to March 12th as the opening day for the new tour. Anti, by the way, is her new album. She put it out in a very unconventional way, kind of following in the footsteps of Beyonce. She released it on the Tidal web streaming service before it became available otherwise, on Amazon and iTunes and all those record places.
And can you tell us about the song? It's called Work.
The song is Work, and as I mentioned, it's Rihanna's 14th number one. Drake is featured on the song, and this is his second number one song. And the two of them once dated a number of years ago.
Oh, so you know so much about these
there's
people.
Just so much stuff going on, Susan. And the song is called Work.
Work, 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 work. You see me happy, work, 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 work. You see me do me there, 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 there. There's something about that work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the cafe, my ta, 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 ta. Drive me a dessert. No time to have you lurking. You make a like, now you don't like it. You know I dealt with you the nicest. Nobody touched me in the right. Nobody text me in a crisis. I believed all of your dreams are duration. You took my heart, all my keys, and my vision. You took my heart, I must leave a decoration. You mistaken my love, I brought for you for foundation. All that I wanted from you was to give me something that I never had. Something that you never seen. Something that you never been. Mm-hmm. But I wake up and nothing's wrong. Just get ready for work, 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 work.
What else do you know about Rihanna?
Well, Rihanna is right now she's gearing up for the tour, as I mentioned, which is going to be a great tour because she's going to be bringing a lot of guests on.
And so it's always going to be exciting. Rihanna does a great job and is very controversial with the message in her music and her performances on stage, the clothing or the lack thereof that she wears during the shows. Always make her to be a very controversial artist.
What kind of messages?
The messages, R&B, hip-hop, that's kind of the message that she's always been conveying. So there's not much difference with the new album from what we've come to know and love from Rihanna. And by the way, the song Work has been, I guess, received by so many people on the internet that it received over 151 million downloads. So
that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And in addition, it's the ninth number one hit in a row for Rihanna as a non-American, because she is originally from Barbados.
Wow.
Ninth number one in a row for her.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry.
Well, there you go. Thank you, Susan.
I spilled all my emotions tonight. I'm sorry. Rolling, 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 rolling. How many more shots until you're rolling? We just need a face-to-face. You could pick the time and the place. You'll spend some time away. Now you need to forward and give me all the work, 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 work.
It's me up in work, 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 work. You see me do my da-da-da-da-da-da. So me better work, 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 work. When you walk out, la-la-la-la-la. I'm in the car for my tur-tur-tur-tur-tur.
The music of Rihanna, she's singing there along with Drake. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent speech at Stanford University, Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor Tom Malinowski spoke of an age-old contest, the struggle between the desire of people to be free, to be treated with dignity, and to have control over their own lives, and the fundamentally authoritarian impulse that believes ordinary men and women are too small-minded to govern their own affairs. The impulse that fuels the dictator's desire to seize and cling to power. Today, the latter impulse, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, is seen in its most extreme manifestation in ISIL, where terrorists seek to use the veneer of religious legitimacy to justify a thirst for control that includes the desire to kill, rape, and subjugate. But there are other places that reflect the authoritarian urge. Bashar al-Assad's Syria, with its brutal reaction to the aspirations of the Arab Spring. Vladimir Putin's Russia, where human rights organizations are now being vilified as traitors. China, where the government is lashing out at dissidents at home and kidnapping them abroad. But the ardent desire for people to control their own lives is also having its successes, said Mr. Malinowski. In Burma, where the people were able to cast their ballots for elected lawmakers for the first time in decades. In Sri Lanka, where the two communities that had long divided the country, the Sinhalese and Tamils, came together in an election to oust an authoritarian government. The United States, with its own ideals of democracy and the rule of law, has a great stake in the battle that is being waged. So it makes great sense, Mr. Malinowski said, that we defend people around the world who are trying peacefully to advance respect for human rights before conflict between power and people leads to devastating consequences. That we speak out when governments try to stifle dissent or control the internet or pollute their citizens' efforts and aspirations with corruption. Our hopes for the world may not be fully realized, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, but the world is not falling apart. It is presenting a challenge to which we must rise. And if we keep doing so, I believe things will get better, slowly but surely.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.